Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host. I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com, and this is Haunted Playground at HauntedPlayground.com and at LiveParanormal.com, and of course the Live Paranormal Radio Network syndicated all over the world, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Blog Talk Radio, the list goes on and on. Honored to be here and be part of this family. Every Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific Time, we are here doing Haunted Playground, and I also have a Tuesday night show called Raising the Vibration, and that's at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. And, of course, I do three shows for Live Paranormal's video network on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday nights. Tonight I'll be live at 9 o'clock Pacific Time doing my Haunted Playground After Dark companion to this. I do some free psychic readings. I tell paranormal stories. I answer questions, paranormal and spiritual, and it's fun. So every week on Haunted Playground, I gather folks that I believe to be the brightest, loveliest, and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in both the paranormal and the spiritual communities. And we talk about all things outside the box, whether you believe in life after death or you think there's a Loch Ness Monster in your swimming pool, you belong right here on Haunted Playground. And these two wonderful guys are making their debut here, although one of them has been on a show of mine before, one of them brand new to my radio world. I was recently honored this Halloween to be a guest on their show, which is called Dead Air. Fantastic, along with my friends Melissa St. Hilaire and Renee Watt. Please welcome to the show the terrific hosts of Dead Air and no strangers to the paranormal community. Ken DaCosta is here and also George R. Lopez. Welcome, both of you. How are you? It's great to have you here. Ken, welcome for the first time. George, welcome back. Yep. And what a joy to be on your show. You two are terrific.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, thank you. That's a great compliment. We appreciate that, especially from somebody coming from the West Coast where we aspire here on the East Coast to even try to reach the same level of what you guys are bringing to us out there in the paranormal. So we appreciate it, Sheena. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a haunted coast. It's a pretty haunted coast. And the eerie haunted sounds you hear in the background, those are not pre-planned technical bits. That is none other than my 18-year-old cat, Molly, who basically haunts my life. So
she makes time. I was going to say, it sounds like you pulled out all the stops for us tonight. Thank you for that.
Exactly right. I hired a banshee to provide the soundtrack for the night. Yes, exactly. So, yeah,
fantastic.
It's interesting. I grew up on the East Coast in New Haven, Connecticut, and lived there, and then in the Mid-Atlantic region outside of Baltimore for a while as a kid in a really evil haunted house. So I guess I thought the West Coast was going to be not haunted. Boy, was I surprised. I think basically everywhere that there's ever been a person and places there's never been a person are still haunted. Have you, Ken, ever been anywhere that you thought, yeah, this place isn't haunted at all, like a city or an area of the world?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, I don't ever go into any kind of location with any preconceived ideas. You know, we try to check those at the door and be as objective as possible.
Sure.
And I think the big thing is, you know, when you're doing that, blocking out all the noise is difficult, you know, and no matter how much you've done this, because, you know, you read and hear so much about it that you have to make the effort to manage your expectations and to make sure, you know, the data you're collecting and everything. Hi, Molly. The data you're collecting is legitimate and you reach it in an unbiased manner. But Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of places that have met expectations, and conversely, there are a lot of them where you expect nothing and nothing seems to happen, and then you review everything and you go, wow.
Yeah, right, right. And those are specific locations, right? But do you believe there's an actual place in the world, like that there's an area of the country or there's a country in the world that doesn't have some amount of haunting? Because I believe that it's just, the paranormal is just everywhere. In a specific location might not live up to its paranormal reputation, but certainly I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any area of the world where there wasn't something, because I just think there's so many layers, right, of activity that's happened since the Earth was formed.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, let George jump in as well. To me, I don't think that there is a place that doesn't have some type of claim or activity or, you know, surrounding it. I think a lot of it has to do, you have to go back. You have to go back to a very spiritual time. There are places, we all know them, you know, Sedona, New Orleans, Savannah, Georgia. A lot of these cities were built on their dead. When you're talking about East Coast, West Coast, you're talking about settlements. And I think if it's true that trauma and tragedy tends to exacerbate and trigger these things, then the East and the West Coast falls into that category. But this is true all over the world, whether it's in the Far East, whether it's European nations, whether it's African countries. A lot of it has to do with settlers who came in, and of course, you know, they bring their superstitions and they bring their folklore with them when they go to these places. But I think they soon find out that this is a phenomena that is global. And I'd be hard-pressed to tell you or even venture a guess as to a place on this earth that does not have some form of the supernatural sort of woven within the fabric of that particular place.
Of course there is, Ken. The one and only place that I know for sure is Boca Raton, Florida, because most of the people there who have died, nobody told them, because they're all senior citizens and retirees. So
yeah, just,
they can't haunt the place.
They're just stubborn.
Exactly.
But Florida, right, is a place, I mean, we were joking, but that is particularly haunted, I think, because so much of it is literally on water, right, on swampland. I grew up out here in Los Angeles, about an hour south of Los Angeles, in a place that's right on the, really, literally right on the coast. And what separates us from the coast is a wildlife preserve. So basically the house I grew up in is, you know, sits on sand and it's below sea level. And I think you find in places like that, that there's a lot of activity because of all the water.
It's all subject to speculation. You know, Ken and I had a conversation just today about the ideologies of the paranormal, why things happen the way that they do. You know, we believe that spirits drain energy from equipment, but we have no proof. You know, there's a thought in the process of the field that time really doesn't exist on the other side, but we have no proof. This is all pure conjecture. And, you know, while we can sit there and say, yes, anything near water, anything near railroad tracks is another one. We would say that it's a conduit, and that's why there's more activity in those areas. Then, you know, we can always find a spot and find the explanation as to why the phenomena is occurring in that particular location. Is it because of the electrical wires that are nearby? Is it because of running water that's nearby or underneath the property? Is it because of ley lines? Is it because of the type of stone that building or the property surrounding it is made from? So, again, what you're looking for is an explanation or justification or a cause or an excuse why a particular place has the activity that's going on. But I, you know, really, all jokes aside, talking about Boca Raton, but I think pretty much you can find some sort of activity anywhere that you would go, whether you're bringing it with you, it's transient, or it's actually fixed in that location. But, you know, you don't have to go to a 200-year-old hospital or hotel or asylum or prison to find and detect these locations. They're more fun. They're more spooky. But I think you could do it just as well just at your local park and be able to come up with something if you persist long enough.
Yeah, I
agree.
I agree with that.
Ken.
Yeah, I mean, I
do too.
Which is why we can't be satisfied to just turn on the cameras and bring some gizmos with us, because the thing that we're looking for is this common denominator, if indeed one exists, that may run through these locations where you have to take stock of environmental conditions and atmospheric conditions, because we need to know how they affect us, how they affect our brain patterns, how they affect our perceptions. And what we're always looking for at these places is the it factor, whatever that is, the X factor. And maybe the X factor is us. But regardless of what that might be, we have to go one step further than just taking pictures. And all of that is important to document it. But we have to look at the world and the environment around us to try to determine if there are certain common factors that are involved in the manifestation of the paranormal, whether it's aerial phenomena, whether it's, like you say, Loch Ness Monster in your pool, whatever facet of this field, cryptozoology, ufology, you know, ghosts and hauntings, whatever. I think that's the thing that we have to strive for, is to try, if we can, to determine if there are some factors that are in common for the different places that these things are reported.
Absolutely. Absolutely true, yeah. And do you think, because I think we're learning more as the community becomes more public. I mean, I wanted to say it was a young community, but it's really not. I mean, the paranormal and it's an old community. It's just that it didn't used to be as commonly known, and not that many people talked about it, and there wasn't as much television and film and radio and print to let you know how much of it was out there. But it seems the more that we learn about the paranormal, the more that we learn that all of those communities that you just mentioned, every one of those communities really, they kind of blend into each other. Do you know what I mean? There is more. For instance, this summer I went out with our mutual friend Andrea Perrin to do a documentary shoot in Joshua Tree, California, just a very mystical, magic place, like you were talking earlier about Sedona and New Orleans and Taos and those kinds of places. And Joshua Tree is definitely one of those places. To differentiate, right, between what is off-worlders, what is an earth spirit, what's an interdimensional, what's actually a haunting of beings that lived, it all kind of blurs together, right? And I think if you add in the idea of the interdimensional, then it really blurs in together. Is Bigfoot a creature, or is Bigfoot interdimensional? Is Mothman a creature or interdimensional? I mean, I think we have to start thinking now about, we're rethinking what we think of the ufology community, what we think of angels, right? Now that we're getting, the more knowledge we're getting, the more we're beginning to think about how all these things could be related. I mean, George, do you find that to be true?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I have to kind of describe our field, the paranormal field, in a parallel with the medical field. We are still using leeches. We are still doing bloodletting. We were just on the precipice of discovery and learning, and the technology is not moving us forward. If anything, it's keeping us back from our own sixth sense capabilities and what we can learn from that. And regardless of the communication, we have one major problem, Sheena, in this field, collectively across the entire umbrella, whether it's ufology, whether it's mythology, paranormal phenomena, as far as spirits are concerned, we have one major problem. We look at all of this, including cryptozoology, as these entities being equal or less to our intelligence. We don't look at the perspective that we need to catch up and we need to learn and we need to respect what it is that we're having dialogue with, because good chances are, because their survival in a lot of these cases.
Did I lose you? Did we lose George? Ken, can I hear you okay?
Yeah.
Up a little bit.
I'm still here. Can
George,
you hear me?
Talk again, sweetheart.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. Now you sound great. Okay, we just lost you for a minute. I never know if that's what that is. But please go back a couple of sentences and repeat.
Okay. And probably because I was on speakerphone, that's always a possibility. So, what I was basically just saying there is that we have one major fault within this sort of community, and that's that we look at what it is that we're researching as our equals or less, and we never look at it as greater than ourselves, the capability that some of these things that have been around for millennia, if not more, have acquired the knowledge, the experience, and the intellect that is far greater than each individual that's out there. And now we're just relying on equipment to be able to make that communication back and forth. And I think that lessens that connection that we would need in any of the titles, any of the nomenclatures under the title of paranormal. We are we're missing a lot of opportunities out there because of our arrogance and because of our ignorance. So, you know, again, there is a possibility somewhere down the line that, as we've said before, that we will make headway. But in the route that we're going right now, I don't see that anytime soon. We're still working with, you know, pitchforks and knives and leeches and bloodletting. We're nowhere near where we need to be yet as far as this field is concerned.
Right. Old tape recorders.
I wanted to, jump in real quick on that. I mean, there is something right now that's been around for a while. It's called a unified paranormal theory. And it speaks to what you're alluding to, Sheena, that some of these sightings and some of these experiences people have are concurrent with each other. We see UFO claims in the same area where there's Bigfoot activity, or which has led people to wonder if all of this is connected somehow, whether it's interdimensionally or whatever the case may be. It's a theory that's been kicking around for a while, but it's one that's being revisited now because we do have a lot of contact with each other by virtue of the times we live in where people can share information if it's done correctly. And they're starting to find out that across these different fields that sometimes were at odds, you go back to common denominators and common factors that I mentioned before, and they're starting to find things. The trick is to not connect the dots where there aren't any and jump to a lot of conclusions, because those things in this day, and, you know, not to be that get the hell off my lawn guy, but in this day, the paranormal has been around since the beginnings of man, you know, things that we couldn't explain. What's
Absolutely.
Different these days are the delivery system, because you had spoken word, oral traditions, things like that. And then maybe there were some books that were written, and occasionally, you know, something would be on TV. But now you have everyone out there who is trying to make a show or trying to make a video. So the delivery system of all this information has changed, where people do it for entertainment, which is fine. I have no problem with that at all. But the good part, the yin and the yang of this is that, you know, because so much of it makes it a less taboo subject to talk about, and I'll give you that. But on the same token, I think it creates unrealistic expectations in people who are just casual viewers or just curious about the paranormal, where they get
Sure.
sort of an unrealistic view of what it is that we actually do in the real world.
Of course. Right. Well, because they watch a film, right, and they see in that film what is maybe the accumulation of somebody's 30 years of paranormal investigating crammed into a 90-minute movie.
Mm-hmm. they think every house is. Although I have to tell you, I grew up in a house that was super active. So there are places where a lot of stuff happens. But I think you can't go into every situation expecting that that's all going to happen to you at one time. And even if it's happened to someone else, it doesn't mean it's going to happen to you.
Oh,
I think you just have to go in open-minded with the idea of anything could happen.
I couldn't agree more, and I've said this on more than one occasion, even on our even on the Dead Air show, that when we're called from somebody, a lot of times they'll say, I need an investigation, and I'm sort of like, well, we need to pump the brakes. I mean, tell me your story, tell me what's going on, because we both have to mutually agree that that's the best way to proceed, because investigations are intrusive processes. You know, we're going to set up cameras, and you can't watch TV, and you can't talk, and you can't make a lot of noise, control the environment. It's a difficult thing when you get to this. But the bigger point is that I try to make it clear that if you lived in a house for 25, 30, 40 years, or it's been in your family for 100 years, it's kind of unrealistic that I can go in there for 6, 7, maybe 8 hours and experience everything that you have. So I know we like to have voices come out of boxes and we want it right now and instant gratification, but a lot of times it requires multiple visits, and there's a process that you have to go through. It just doesn't happen just because you ask nicely or you just happen to be in the right place at the right time, maybe. But these things are processes, again, in the real world. You know, they're not 18-minute videos.
No, that's absolutely true. And also in a negative situation, right? And I grew up in a very negative house. Sometimes they hide. Sometimes they're just there to mess with whoever lives there, and they put their party manners on for visitors. We had people come and spend the night in that house that felt nothing. Relatives came. My friends would spend the night. It was only the people that stuck around for long periods of time that then began to witness what was going on. So I think sometimes if we go into a haunted restaurant, per se, right, where the employees have seen this and this has happened and that's happened, and you go in and the spirits are kind of like, oh, hi, we're not doing anything. And you'll get nothing. And sometimes you have to be there for a while, or sometimes maybe you're never going to see what the actual people who live and or work there see, right?
Well, I think that's reasonable to assume that you're not going to walk in and just, as I say, because you asked nicely and you have all your gear laid out, that these things are going to manifest and happen to you. I think it's kind of important to put yourself in the same position, in the same situation as the people who are experiencers, because I know we like to talk about going around in the dark with all our equipment, but the fact remains that most sightings occur during the day. So again, you're looking to see if there's something, some common factor, maybe a certain time of day, or maybe a certain person in the house always is present when these things happen. So you might want to remove that person. You might want to bring that person in and document the differences as far as what happens. So, again, it's just part of a process and not just about turning the cameras on, but I think that that's something that through trial and error, we all make mistakes. So through trial and error, we learn by experience.
Absolutely true. Yeah. Have you ever, George, gone in somewhere and expected that you were looking for a haunting, but then believed what you got wasn't actually a haunting? It was some kind of inner spirit or interdimensional or maybe even an off-world situation?
No, I think only the reason why or my explanation behind that would be because you kind of box yourself in mentally when you're doing that investigation. In other words, you're not going into a residential case or even a commercial case, and you step into an empty room and you put your recorder down and you've got your camera running and you go, is there a spirit here that would like to talk to me? And by the way, if not, can I speak to the local Bigfoot or Mothman or extraterrestrial that happens to be. In other words, nobody's doing that. They've got a mindset and a goal set based upon the claims of the individuals that are property owners, or they're running it, and they say, this happened, this happened, this happened. And then we go by our experience and say, well, that does sound like it's either poltergeist, or it sounds like it's demonic, or it sounds like it's just a typical haunting, be it residual or intelligent. So we will now begin the process based upon those experiences. We don't start to say, well, are you sure that it's not cryptid? Are you sure that it's not mythological? Are you sure that it's not extraterrestrial, multidimensional? We don't even go down that road unless there are certain indicators by the property owners that there's something more. I feel like I'm being abducted or lifting out of my bed. Well, this may not be a possession. This may not be an abduction. There may be something completely different. You may be doing an out-of-body experience. And it just, I think what you're saying here, Sheena, is if an investigator goes in there and tries to compound the possibilities, well, the investigation grows greater also. So I guess it's more so for anybody out there from a pragmatic standpoint, as an investigator has to go through a process of elimination. If it is not this, then it must be one of the other categories. So let's knock those down, building blocks, but in reverse, until you get down to that one block and you say, okay, this is spiritual, this is interdimensional, this is extraterrestrial, or any other category out there. But to go in with the expectation of that full spectrum, cheap sell for dead air full spectrum, but it makes it very, very difficult then to nail down exactly what you're dealing with.
I agree. But also, don't you think sometimes that if you're in a home or a commercial space and the folks who live and or work there don't really know about all those other things, they assume anything that's supernatural is a ghost, is the ghost of a dead person who lived there who is now trying to communicate with them. I mean, some people don't believe can be haunted unless somebody dies in the house, you know? So you're dealing with folks that don't have the full spectrum knowledge that you have, right?
Well, I mean, you're looking at it from a perspective as a paranormal investigator, but as you know, working with Andrew Perrin and working with others and talking on your shows with these other people in other categories, there is nobody that would go out to Skinwalker Ranch and say, you know, I'd really like to know if Bigfoot's here. I'd really like to know if there's a dead person here. First thing they're trying to communicate with is those from other worlds. It's the same principal thing. Those that are going out and hitting trees with sticks looking for Bigfoot are usually not also including extraterrestrial contact or spirit phenomena. And, you know, we run the gambit with the shows that we do joking about it. Well, what about ghosts of Bigfoot? What about ghosts of extraterrestrials? Do they also exist? Can we communicate with them? I mean, it's like spiraling down and continuing to fall from the single purpose of that contact, the initial purpose of that contact. If you start throwing more and more into the fold, maybe you lose the message down the way. So that it's a difficult route to go as an investigator. You have to kind of take that first road, and then if you have detours along the way, that's going to be created by the communication that you're getting. But if you start going, I've got to go down six different roads at the same time, that makes it very difficult to get a complete investigation, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree, and it's so different than going into something as a sensitive the way that I do, because I just go into something with absolutely no expectations and allow whatever's out there to tell me what's going on and who they are. So it's kind of a different perspective. And but I understand, as an investigator, when you're trying to actually gather physical evidence, you sort of have to have a focus when you go in and a plan based on what the homeowners and or employees tell you is going on. And I completely understand that. And sometimes we're surprised, right? Sometimes what we think is going on isn't what's going on. Maybe you're out in the forest hitting trees with sticks, and you realize that you really are attracting ghosts of the forest or elementals in the forest and not Bigfoot, you know? I agree that Bigfoot's probably not on the Queen Mary, although wouldn't that be great if he was? I think I would love that.
I mean,
I wouldn't rule it out either. I think it's just important. I mean, I think it's, yes, it's as investigators and as people who are trying to help others in these situations, we need to sort of find the sweet spot between getting too overwhelmed with, oh, my God, it could be anything, and also keeping our minds open to, well, sometimes we go in thinking this is an old guy that lived in the house, and it turns out this is a really old spirit that lived in the ground, you know?
Sure. I mean, and you know, Sheena, because we spoke on our show, that you've gone into people's homes, and I've literally done hundreds of them in my years, and that's an entirely different dynamic. When you're dealing with the human element, you're dealing with a family unit, you may be dealing with children, you may be dealing with people who have ramped up anxiety. We like to call it stacking, and what I mean by that is something unusual happens. And it could be anything. You fill in your blank here. Something happened in the house. I saw a woman walk through a wall, whatever the case may be. My keys went missing. And what happens after that, when things start going sideways and you can't explain them, you tend to assign a supernatural value for anything that happens because you're on edge. Could be a knock, a noise, a bang, something falls in the corner by itself. And they start stacking these things one on top of the other. And I think the best thing that we can do as investigators or advocates for these people when we're called in to just try to help them make sense of it is to pull all that stuff off the pile and just get to the root of the problem. But the bigger thing is the dynamic going into someone's home. It's one thing for them to open up the museum and stay in a room someplace and let you do your thing. And it's an entirely different thing when you're dealing with various human emotions because you don't know, you never know what you're walking into. It could be a bad family dynamic there. There could be a lot of things that contribute to this. So, I mean, I'm not a psychologist and I'm never going to pretend to be one. As a means to my own end, for my own ego gratification. But a lot of times you sort of have to be sort of a layman's type of counselor when you go into those kind of situations because they can really start to manifest in a very, very weird way. So this is why I think going into homes, hey, listen, you want to go into that school or this museum or this abandoned old jail, that's fine, but going into people's homes, and I've said this and I will say it and I don't apologize for it, it's not for everyone. Everyone shouldn't be doing this. I think it takes a certain mindset and a certain type of person, a people person, if you will, to be able to go in and speak to a family, you know, people that live there, because you can do your thing and then go home, but you always have to remember you're saying goodnight, and they have to stay there.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's what people always say, oh, you grew up in a haunted house. Cool. Yeah. No, it wasn't cool, and it was
not
scary.
Really.
Because your home is supposed to be your safe space, right? I mean, that's where you're supposed to be able to go back, get away from the scary world, and relax. And when you live in a place of chaos, you are never going to ever relax. And I don't think my family relaxed that whole 4.5 years. Everybody
yeah.
was at each other's throats, and nobody was sleeping, except my dad, who was denying it all and then later admitted it. You know, everybody, and even he was saying there was nothing in there, but he was certainly not acting in his best self. He was certainly acting like something was in there. So I think that it's not good for anybody to live in a situation like that. I mean, I think it's scary enough. Yeah. I have a ton of friends that worked at the Comedy Store, both on stage and behind the scenes, that will tell you that that was a scary place to work. And people used to make bets for who got to go to the basement and get something because it was so terrible. So it's not fun to work in a place like that either, but I think especially in a home, that's when it's really terrible. And
it takes a
sensitive soul, right?
Yeah, a quick example of that is there's a home in Massachusetts that we've probably gone to 25 times. And as often is the case, we get to know these people and we become friendly with them and we check on them periodically, but it goes beyond that. Sometimes they'll say, hey, why don't you come over for dinner or something like that? And, you know, it's great to build those kind of relationships with the home or whatever the location is, because I'm an advocate of that. I think you have to establish an identity and a relationship with the space that you're in. As odd as that sounds, I'm not suggesting that the building is a living, breathing thing, but it is to some degree. But in this particular home in Massachusetts, it is an absolutely beautiful Victorian, and I think that there are 10 rooms in the place, and 6 of them they didn't want to go into because of the things that are happening or they're afraid of what they might see or experience there. You can't live that way. I mean, you're busting your ass paying the mortgage on this place and half the house you won't even go into. That's the thing where you have to come and just try to, I guess, empower them to take their lives back, to take their home back, because a lot of people make the mistake of playing the role of victim. And I know it's easier said than done when it scares the hell out of you, but nonetheless, you have to make an affirmation that you have to take this back as a living person. And I think that's one of the most solid things that you can do for somebody.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and don't you also find that the rooms that nobody goes in, those are often the rooms that then become more haunted because the spirit activity piles up in an area where there's not human energy to chase it away. So these rooms that nobody goes in become worse. I did a pilot for a paranormal television show once, and these folks lived in the middle of Los Angeles Metro in a townhome, but there was a nunnery across the way that had a very haunted past. And I think probably where their townhome complex was part of that nunnery at some point. And they just, you know, nobody, you know, the church sells off pieces of stuff and they built a place. They had a room, their second bedroom, and they hadn't been in it in like 5 years. And they were trying to turn it into their nursery because she was expecting. I thought, wow, you know what? If a room was so haunted, I hadn't been in it in 5 years, and the cat wouldn't even go in it. The last thing in the world I would do is put my baby in it. But they were trying to find a way to clear this room that they had never been in. And when you went in the room, part of what you felt was that empty energy where the spirits were allowed to sort of run free because no humans were there. That's why I think you find a lot of hauntings in abandoned places, because there's no light energy. There's no warm, living being energy to push it out. You know what I mean? So I think the worst thing that you can do in a case like that is to not go in those rooms, because then they just get worse. I mean, has that been your experience, Ken?
Personally, yeah. Because one of the things we do, and I go back to something George said before, makes total sense. You go in and you have these claims of a house. I mean, I like to investigate the rooms where there aren't any claims. And I like to measure those rooms, for lack of a better word, environmentally, because I want to see if there's a difference between this particular room. Is there something about the temperature, the environment, the energy that's in that room, something as mundane as the wiring? I think it's important. Again, it goes back to claiming your space back. Sometimes it's easier said than done when it scares the hell out of you. But nonetheless, I think that the idea of having a human presence there and trying to overcome these things is very important, because you don't want to surrender, especially your own home, you don't want to surrender any part of it to you know, animal, mineral, vegetable, or spirit at that point, because you're going to find yourself almost imprisoned in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. Very true. You need to, I remember once when I first started doing radio, I had a guest on that had been a British medium that had been on a British show that was very popular at the time. So I first started doing interview radio at the last place I worked at. And she said, if you want to chase a ghost out, laugh, jump up and down, put on happy music, put a Disney movie on and laugh and smile. And there is really something to be said for that, right? I mean, especially if you're encountering a negative haunting, there is something about being happy in spite of it that helps to lessen the activity. Whereas if you feed into it, you know, I had a very gregarious Irish Scorpio mother, and she would scream at that thing and tell it to go screw itself. And I think it kicked up the activity. I think my fear and her anger actually made it worse. I think if you kind of laugh at it and just live your life and be happy in spite of it, sometimes that's a way to clear the energy a bit, I think. But I think when we go to these places and we are in these folks' homes, right, they're in such fear. And sometimes, especially the more negative spirits, are really feeding on that fear. You know,
sure.
Is that, I mean, George, does that resonate with you?
A lot of that, Sheena, resonates with me in the sense that it infuriates me, it angers me. This is one of the reasons why sometimes I feel I am somewhat ostracized from the paranormal community, lecture community, in a sense, because, you know, here again, why is so much of these hauntings villainized to such a degree where, you know, again, people will alienate themselves from half their house or a few rooms in their house for that matter. And it's like, what has it done to make you so fearful? You know, if you're having doors opening and closing, if you're having just these phantom sounds that are happening, but unless somebody has been physically hurt, you're creating it within your own imagination, not to mention mainstream media doesn't help either because they profit off of fear. So it's sold into your brain watching horror movies or paranormal television shows, and this is negative and that's negative, when it's such a small percentage of this field where something like that is actually threatening to the individuals. But yes, your grandmother screaming, your fear could be self-manifesting unto itself, and really has nothing to do with the actual haunting. But we're basically serving it up in this field to be frightened about this activity. You know, I have activity in my house, and I've had for quite some time. I don't look at it as a negative. If I see a shadow, if I see an apparition, if I hear anything, if there's knocking sounds, whatever it may be, hey, let's communicate some more. If there's a message you're trying to get across, I'd love to be able to help if you need help. If you don't need help and you're just looking for attention, I'm here. You know, come sit down next to me, watch the movie that I'm watching, you know, whatever it may be. But it's predominantly taken from a negative connotation. And I think if it was sold better as a blessing, as an opportunity to make connection with the other side, I mean, that's what the ultimate goal is, I think, from every investigator, to find out how to contact the afterlife. And maybe we'll never get the true answers on it, but let's go ahead and scare ourselves in the meantime. Let's turn the lights off and let's jump in every little nuance of everything that we experience out there. We're socially programmed to do that. And that's a shame of the field. It should be absolutely euphoric to make that kind of a connection. And we've not reached that point yet in this field.
Right. And that's the thing. If you just want to be scared, go to a haunted corn maze. I mean, there are enough places that you can go to be scared. Your investigation doesn't have to be your thrill ride. And it's okay. But people always say, how can you watch scary movies? Well, I started watching scary movies when I was little as a catharsis for that house I grew up in. But now, I mean, I have to admit, I love them. I'm fascinated with the way that stories are handled. I'm fascinated to see how close to what actually goes on in the community a filmmaker gets right. And I just like to be scared. I love Halloween, and I like to be scared. Now, I don't want to live in a house with that because we did that, not a good thing. But I love scary movies. I think they're fantastically fun. So it's okay to enjoy the fun of a scary movie, but still, when you are investigating, go in looking for something serious and not, you know, it's the whole thing about looking for the demon. Oh, I want to see a demon. I want a demon. It's like, first of all, you would know what to do with a demon if it was within 50 feet of you. And all these folks that want to see a demon, I can tell you quite honestly from the little bit of negativity I experienced growing up in that house, you don't want that. Nobody wants that. No one wants a demon in their life. But it's that idea, right, that we see what we see on TV, like you said, George, and then we're going to jump into the middle of it, and it's I'm going to investigate.
I mean, if we were going to sit down, you and I, a couple of glasses of wine, and let's talk about your experiences as a child, I may take a different perspective to what you experienced. But, you know, you were talking about paranormal investigators seeking out demons. These residential cases, and Ken could probably speak on this much more eloquently because of his years of experience. And these people just want not to be scared. And there's nobody better than Ken and his team, Riser Paranormal, who come in there in a very pragmatic and stoic way to say, let's get down to the answers for this. And when they're doing their investigation, it is respectful and looking for the proper answers and then giving answers to those homeowners so that they don't let their imaginations run away with them anymore. And again, there are too many teams out there that are going in there with the holy water and with the crucifix, and they're ready to put on a performance of a lifetime because why they start on Ghost Adventures. Let's repeat it because it seems exciting.
Sure.
You know, let's bring in the echo box because it sounds very, very sinister. And at least at this point in time, we can start saying, I think I heard the word demon. It's again, it's a shame of the matter that we have lost our direction with this field because fear is more entertaining. Jump scares are more entertaining.
I agree 100%. Well, and also it's real fun for you to go in with your holy water and put on your exorcist show, but then you leave and these folks still have to live in this place that's scaring them. You know, you have to think about the fact that these are people's lives and you're in someone's home. And people are scared. I mean, for people to be, I mean, okay, there's some people who are just like paranormal junkies, right, that want their place to be haunted. They call because they want the team to come. They're hoping it's haunted. But most people who contact a team, they're scared. They're not enjoying living in their house because it's haunted. And they're asking for your help. And for the idea is for them to be less scared after you come and not more scared. Right, Ken?
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, here's one of the dirty little secrets about the paranormal. If you can instill fear in somebody, you can control them to a degree. You can force them to become dependent on you. If you go somewhere and say there's something evil here and you're in danger and, I would be very worried about the kids and I'm going to go get a, you know, I'll go see if I can get a priest or somebody to bless, you know, with really no basis for saying that. But if you meet the right or the wrong type of people, as far as the homeowners, it's a very powerful feeling that they're hinging on every word that you say. And this is what I mean. This is why fear sells. This is why fear is a controlling thing. I have always thought, and I've always lived by this, our job, if that's what you want to call it, or the biggest contribution we can make going into a place is to take fear away. And that might be coming in with a smile on your face and being a little bubbly and, you know, not being a fool or anything, but maybe a well-timed, appropriate joke. Yes, I'd love a cup of coffee. Let's sit down. Yep, sure. You donuts? Sure, I'll have a donut with you. And then you sit down, and hopefully what will happen is that if you can give off that vibe to somebody to the point where they say, well, this person isn't freaking out here, you know, they're not looking around, you know, making a circle of salt around the kitchen table. I mean, they don't seem to be particularly concerned about it. And maybe that takes a little bit of that anxiety away. But people will use that in this field, and I have seen it, to exercise power over someone else. And, I mean, it really is a horrible thing. I've always thought that going into any place, my job, as it were, is not to find ghosts. My job is to go into this place and try to make sense of what in the end may be make no sense at all. I give you that. We've walked away from enough places saying, yeah, there's something going on in here. But the idea that, again, we go back to the family dynamic, to me, the best possible outcome is to say you're fine. Not that there's something demonic and something came through the box, but to be able to say to someone, it's okay, we figured it out, or if there is a presence here, you have a couple of options. You can accept it, you can coexist, but I'm not going to tell you pack your things and get out of here. You're just trying to help people have some type of understanding and closure of this thing. So again, to me, right, the best possible outcome is to be able to tell somebody you're safe, is it not?
Absolutely. I didn't mean to laugh, and I wasn't laughing at anybody's pain. I was laughing at how many paranormal shows I've seen where the answer is always, you have to leave. And I think, you know, everybody had to leave, like you said.
There's
right,
one in
there's
particular,
one in particular
that,
where we have to leave every week.
It should go unnamed, but there's one that drives me crazy with that.
There is one that wants you to leave every week, or if you're not going to leave, you have to get 17 exorcists and 14 shaman, and you have to buy a pink velvet hat and get a fairy wand.
We're talking the same language here, Sheena.
It's very, very imaginative and very imaginative and very colorful. But if, like what you were saying about the spirits in your house, George, if everybody had to leave because they had a spirit in their house, look, I know the place I live now has activity because from literally the week I moved there, I've seen tall black figures out of the corners of my eyes, only outside, not inside. But there are times I live on a split level townhome, four levels. There are times if I go down to the living room and I haven't had to be down there all day and it's nighttime, I can feel that something has been moving around in there while I wasn't in that space. And okay. Or if I'm not there for a while because I'm down at the beach at my other place and I go home, I can tell some stuff's been moving around. All right. But nothing is actively torturing me. I'm not waking up in the middle of the night choking. It's not freezing cold. It's just, there's just some stuff. It's hard not to live someplace where there's something. But everything isn't, you have to grab the baby in one hand and the dog in the other and run hell-bent for leather to the car and never come back to get your stuff. I mean, that is very, very rare occasions when that happens. And if you're living in a home and you're listening to this right now and that's not how bad it is, then be very thankful because nobody wants that. That's not fun. And, you know that it's okay. And when you have investigators come, the idea is to identify what it is. And isn't it great when you find out it actually is something? Because then you know you're not crazy and that's lovely. And then isn't it nice when you realize, hey, you know what, maybe if you tried this or this, or you just tried to open more windows, or you tried to, you know, maybe burn a candle, it would get better, or just have a little talk with them and say, look, you know, you don't have to go home, but you can't stay here, or I'm happy if you're here, but let's not get involved in my life, and then things will get better. And in 99% of the cases, that is the story, and isn't that wonderful?
If the people from the television show listen to you talk about those tall shadows outside your window, it would either be an ethereal or it would be an alien or you'd have to run. So, sometimes you got to listen to the voice of reason with what it is that we're doing.
Or an alien. That's an interesting thing, and I don't want to get too far into that because probably people from that show have been on my show. But I do want to say in a very non-identifying way, that it's interesting how as the seasons have progressed, there's another show I can think of that as the seasons have progressed, everything's become a demon. in the show I'm thinking about right now, as the seasons have progressed, everything has become extraterrestrial, when before it wasn't. So either there's just a whole bunch more off-worlders that have descended in the world between season 10 and 11, or suddenly somebody discovered that those were a thing on their radar, and now they should talk about that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, if you can go to your home and bring a client to tears, that's gold.
Yeah, not good.
You know, I mean, yeah. I understand you're trying to tell a story, convey it to the audience, but, I mean, I don't want to, you know, really get into the weeds on television, because there are a lot of people who just get so upset about it. And, you know, I do, too, from time to time, because somebody just crosses the line. But for the most part, it's just kind of like, take it as entertainment. You know, don't
right.
look any deeper than that. You know, I mean, turn it off
right.
then, you know, if it's silly. But, I mean, there's no sense. And I think a lot of times, as I said earlier, it doesn't do us any favors, because people think that's who we are. And, you know, sometimes
right.
they're disappointed because of the process we do. But just take it for what it's worth.
Well, I think the good thing about it, and I'll say this as kind of the wrap-up, is that so much of it being out there and people watching the stories, at least it's making more people aware that they're not crazy and they're not damned, and sometimes something's just in your house, and it could happen to your neighbors, it could happen to you, and it's okay. Because in the 70s, when it happened to us, when I was little, we didn't know who to talk to, and we weren't really we weren't Catholic, so we didn't call a priest, and we didn't know about paranormal investigators, and there weren't that many back then, and you thought you were crazy, and it was scary, and you didn't know who to talk to. So at least now with these shows, you watch it on TV and think, oh, that happened in my house. Okay, that's the thing. I got it. And then you pull out the yellow pages and try to find 17 shaman. But you know, at least people don't feel as isolated and like they're alone, or like there's something wrong with them anymore. And I think that's really important. You guys, you're amazing. We have blown through an hour. It seems like 5 minutes. Will you come back and do this with me again? I'd love it.
We'd be happy to.
And where can people find you each online and the show and everything?
Tell them, George. George has this part now.
Most importantly, I want to thank you, Sheena, for not just having us on the show, but for what you do for the community. I mean, you're on, at last I counted, 8,000 different platforms all over the country and all over the world. So it's your wonderful conduit for all of us here in the paranormal field. Yeah, the show is Dead Air Full Spectrum. You can catch us Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 2-hour show, and we've got some great stuff coming up this next Sunday. We've got everybody that went to the Conjuring House for the live Dark Zone event are going to be joining us.
Nice.
Jay Blumke, hopefully Susan Slaughter, of course, Andrea Perrin, and some of the other investigators, including Mr. DaCosta himself, who was also there on Saturday night of that 3-day marathon investigation. So make sure you guys come and check it out.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being here, my friends. It's so appreciated. And everybody check out Dead Air Full Spectrum. It's wonderful. And anytime, again, you need a guest, you know where I am, even if it's last minute. I'm a cheap date. You just call me and let me know, and I'd be happy to be a part of anything you're doing.
Be careful what you wish for. You may have to get that restraining order on us.
Nah, I can't wait. Let's get that. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. I think you guys are truly wonderful, and what a joy to have you on the show and to be part of your world and have you as part of mine. And please, let's come back and let's do this again. I would absolutely love that. The wonderful Ken DaCosta, George R. Lopez, Dead Air Full Spectrum is the show. What a joy to have them here. I'm Sheena Metal at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. The show's at HauntedPlayground.com. We're here every Wednesday on the Live Paranormal Radio Network, 6 o'clock Pacific time at LiveParanormal.com, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher. Find me on social media at Sheena Metal everywhere. I'll see you live tonight at 9 o'clock on Live Paranormal's video channel, facebook.com/TheLiveParanormal. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity. raise your vibration, stay spooky, believe in what you believe in, and don't ever let anybody tell you that what you believe in is wrong. And thank you for being a part of the spiritual and paranormal communities. We'll see you next time. I love you all.